As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Your alternative talk radio contact, The Planet, KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
John Paul, you have been on Into the Fray 3 other times, and actually you're peppered into other episodes, but your main episodes are Into the Fray 84, 89, and 113. Those are all titled Thrones, Fates, and Nightmares Edition 1, 2, or 3, but I had to go with the flavor of the show, so I picked Latin words, so this one will be Quator. I don't know how to say that. That sounds right to me. Latin. So this will be Edition 4, and... You hold a master's in theological studies, and I've said this before, that when you first emailed me, this was years now ago, I was pretty intimidated because I'm like, oh my God, he's an MTS. I mean, am I going to be able to keep up with this guy? But you're so down to earth, and we quickly became friends, and you are basically what I call my resident demonologist. So it is about time to have you back on, so welcome back, first of all.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be back. It's been, over a year now? Maybe close to two.
I don't know. Last was 113.
Which was Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and we're on, you're going to be 262, so
wow. That
was a long time ago. So we got a lot to cover, which I want to jump right into the meat and taters. However, if people have not, and I encourage everyone to go back and listen to your episodes, give us a quick, snapshot of who you are and what you do and why we're even sitting here talking about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So first things first, like you said, a master's theological studies, Providence College, 2010. Providence College in the Ocean State, probably one of the better schools for a graduate level theological education. But I do want to make it very clear that just because I have a master's degree in theology, it does not make me an expert on demons or the paranormal. What it does do is it helps me with my research. So when I was done with my master's degree, I started studying demonology. And kind of went from there. that's, you know, I started listening to podcasts. I mean, I was late to the party. I didn't even know what podcasts were like 6 years ago. And then when I found out they were paranormal podcasts, I said, well, let me send out some feelers, see if people want to talk to someone that, you know, maybe has a little bit of knowledge about this type of stuff. And at the time I was thinking of shadow figures in particular, because there's a really strong correlation between, shadow figures and, demonic entities. And, I think Shannon was the first one to pick up on me, and, you know, I got on, and, you know, I thought about making my own podcast for a little while, but that kind of fell through. But really, it's all about me just wanting to kind of get myself out there, number one, and just try to help people with whatever is going on. Because, you know, I set up an email account probably 4 years ago when I tried starting all this stuff, maybe 5 years ago, and I still get emails. I still get referrals from other people, you know, who claim to have or who do have maybe demonic activity or experiences. So that's why I'm continuing to do this, is basically just, I guess, I'm a teacher. You know, I'm a teacher. That's what, you know, I mean, literally, I'm a teacher. But also, right. You know, I'm a teacher, you know, and teachers, they want to spread wisdom. That's what they want to do, no matter what the topic is. And this is a topic that's kind of, it's kind of antiquated right now, you know, especially when people talk about the church and things like that. You know, it's always like, well, yeah, you know, the church is this. They always talk about, you know, the what's going on, all the bad stuff and things like that, and then divisions in the church and all this other stuff. But, you know, to me, demonology and the study of demons has always been something I've taken very seriously. It's not a joke to me. I've seen enough in my life to know that it's real. You know, I've had my confirmation experiences. I've met someone who was possessed. I've, you know, I've done enough to know that when someone reaches out to me and says, hey, you know, I've had this and this happen, what do you think? Can you help? You know, I feel like it's almost a responsibility at this point for me to take a little bit of time and say, you know, well, what can I help you with? You just have some questions, and stuff like that. And, you know, then here we are again. You know, this is why I do this. You know, whenever you call, I answer.
Well, and we've been trying to do this for a while, and we just kept missing the mark. So it's finally going down. And then next month, you and I are going to do a live video chat for the Patreon. So that'll be a whole lot of fun.
That is going to be really cool.
And if anybody ever sees me sharing a lovely drawing of what looks like a pudgy, squat, little football-shaped head demon with what is actually an alligator, a stuffed animal being thrown at it, that was drawn by the artist, super talented artist, Chris Holm. He also does Conspire a Theory podcast, so go check his show out. But that was basically your, like, I have the one-off from when I was a kid. I was a little older than you, I believe. But, you know, when that happened to you, it was kind of, you and I always were like, head scratchers. Like, this was our one-off when we were kids. And obviously you've run into other things, and so have I. But really, you know, for that kind of a confirmation experience and a slap in the face when you're a kid and you're kind of like, didn't have that on my radar at all. Okay. but yeah, that is where that comes from. And I actually just shared that on the Patreon feed, because I was trying to drum up questions for you today. But okay, anyhow. So now, is there anything else you want to say about yourself before we kind of jump in here? You feel like
I feel like I covered all the bases. You know, I just wanted to just reiterate one more time, you know, because whenever you put yourself out there on social media, you know, you get a lot of good stuff, and, you know, you always get some negative stuff, and you got to have thick skin to do what you do, you know, and you got to have thick skin to just, you know, be involved with this type of stuff. So, you know, I just wanted to make a clear line of demarcation to say, like, you know, I'm not here proselytizing Catholicism or any other Christianity. I'm not, you know, doing anything like that. You know, I'm not here claiming to be an expert. But, you know, I am a Catholic, and a lot of the information that we get in demonology comes from Catholicism. So that's, you know, where you're going to hear a lot of my information come from. So I just wanted to make that clear. You know, I'm not here to, you know, Bible thump, so to speak.
Yeah, you've never done that. And first of all, I have not read the Bible, you know, cover to cover. I don't know it well enough to go toe to toe with somebody. And if they bring something up, I wouldn't know enough to, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be able to have that debate or that talk with somebody, really. And of course, it's not a religious show, but you can't help it sometimes. It does touch on that, sorry guys, when we're talking about possession and demonology and things like that. It's going to come up a little bit.
Right. And other, you know, different branches of Christianity deal with demonology differently, you know. And that's why in the past I've always made distinctions between Christianity and Catholicism. And people don't like that. And I get that, you know. But it's just, you know, it's the way it is, you know, you break them down, you know, Islam and Judaism and Catholicism, and, you know, that's the Abrahamic tradition, you know. But like you were saying, you know, sometimes you just offend people. What are you going to do, you know?
I offend people every time I open my mouth. Don't even worry about it. it's just, as you say, you got to have thick skin. I mean, you can't make everybody happy. You just kind of get on and you do your thing and you do the best you can do. And that's all we can do.
Be honest and do what you do. That's it.
Yeah. All right.
That's why I love being. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No. I was just saying that's why I love being on here.
Well, thanks. Thanks, John Paul. No, I'm just, I'll say it not to get all mushy, but I'm really glad that you reached out to me, and I'm glad that I had the balls to go, all right, let me see what this, you know, Mr. MTS over here has got. Okay, you know, I was quite intimidated, though. I'm like, I can't go toe-to-toe with this guy. What am I going to talk to? Masters of Theologicals. But you're a joy to talk to, so thanks for taking the time once again. We always have epic conversations.
We do. And you know what? It's funny because half the time, you know, when I get on my Facebook page or something like that, you know, half the comments I get, you know, it's like, oh, you know, when are you doing another podcast with Shannon? When are you doing another podcast with Shannon? You know, it's always you. It's funny. And I'm not trying to, you know, buddy up or anything like that. But they, for some reason, people like to hear me and you talk. Because I've been on other podcasts.
Yeah.
But people really like to hear us banter.
Yeah, you've heard around a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I know where you've been.
I know where you've been.
Yeah.
I know what you're up to.
I know what you did. Damn you. Yeah, but you always come back. It's all right.
We have a good, you know, repertoire, you know, whatever they call it.
We did right off the bat, so that's why it's cool that we just...
Yeah.
And the cool thing is there's always stuff to talk about because it's such a massive subject. Plus, you actually get out there and do stuff, and that is a good segue.
Yeah.
Into what I just want to go ahead and jump into this because I think it's really important that we cover it.
Let's do it.
Anybody that is familiar with Into the Fray, and, you know, if you listen pretty religiously, pun intended, I guess, episode 2.
Sorry.
Boom in your face, guys. Email Shannon at IntoTheFrayRadio.com. Episode 216 is the Incubus episode with Anne. And if you listen to that episode, guys, I myself was stunned about what was going on. I knew a little bit from her email that she had, you know, she'd been going through a hard time. Something was going on in her house. It was affecting her and her children. And really, the more that she and I got to talking, the more started to kind of come out. And she was vague on some points, and it's some good points to be vague on. And that was what was going on sometimes in bed with her at night with, you know, for lack of a better term, we called the incubus. And John Paul has been in contact with Anne. He is almost near constant contact now because there is still activity in her home. He has been invited actually to go to her home. So that is obviously something that he and I will be kind of, we're going to be in contact with as well. We may even do some sort of a live video feed from there. It's a really important thing, not at all for a content standpoint. And as John Paul said in the beginning of kind of why he does this, it's the same thing. I like to help people. I don't want to be alone in this either. You know, we've all had our one-off experiences or whatever it might be. So John Paul,
Yes. Give
us a snapshot about Anne. Like the background is, this stuff started when she was young, like, what, 4 or 5 or something, and now it's still going on. So tell us, and I encourage everybody to go back again, listen to 216, The Incubus, and that way you can get a really good picture of what's going on in here and speak herself. But we have permission, of course, to talk about this. But yeah, so let's hear from your side of things as far as what's going on with Anne and what you've learned.
So yeah, obviously, like you said, listen to the episodes, because that was, you know, that was pretty profound. But you know, when I think you, it was obviously you referred her, I think, to me, and so we started communicating as to what could be done to stop this. And what she was most concerned about at this point was not so much of the incubus. You know, and for those of you who don't know, an incubus is a demon, is a form of demon. So a demon is a non-human entity, which means it doesn't exist here on Earth. It's not like grandma coming back from the grave and sitting in a rocking chair. So an incubus is a demon who attacks females while they sleep. And a succubus is the opposite of that. It attacks males when they sleep in a, you know, sexual manner, not to get too graphic. There's lots of reasons for this, you know, so it's important just to, you know, to just talk about what these demons are first and foremost, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's like, you know, why this, you know, why that. But anyway, angels and demons cannot reproduce. That's just, you know, whatever the set amount is, that's, you know, so in the, you know, Judeo-Catholic tradition, there are X amount of angels and X amount of demons, period. Angels can't reproduce, although, you know, we do have stories of, you know, from, you know, books that were left out of the Bible and the Apocrypha and stuff like that, where they did try to reproduce, and you get the Nephilim and stuff like that. But well, that's a whole nother show. but, you know, demons, same thing, can't reproduce. So what the incubi and the succubi do is try to create demons by basically, I guess, I don't know if they physically actually, you know, get the person. This is really hard to like talk
no,
about.
No, I understand. I know.
To like climax, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Or if it's more of a spiritual thing, you know what I'm saying? Like a dream. Because, you know, I've said multiple times that they exist in the metaphysical realm and they affect our mind, not our brain. And the mind, of course, is like the most sexual part of our body, really. So in that sense, I think that they try to create their own more demons, you know, and that's kind of the story behind the incubi and the succubi, because if you do, you know, look back on your history and things like that, it's 1/3 of the heavenly host, you know, that fell from heaven. So the demons are way behind, you know, they're outnumbered. If there was a war, and I'm not saying there's going to be, or I believe that, but, you know, this is the tradition. But when we started talking, it was more, there was a lot more manifestations going on, you know, like dreams and figures and masses, like black masses, undulating masses. And this was not just affecting her, it was affecting her kids, it was affecting her boyfriend, you know, so it wasn't just isolated to her, you know, I mean, like, you name it. I mean, like, we talked in the past about the different stages of possession, and then immediately when I started talking to her, I was like, oh my God, I hope this isn't what's going on here. Because demonic siege came to mind immediately. It's like, this house is under siege. You know, if you've got, you know, things getting slammed around and you've got manifestations and people hearing voices and things flying off shelves. I mean, I don't know that, I mean, you know, specifically, because, you know, every time we talk, you know, I mean, she's such a nice, nice person too, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. you know, and she's so down to earth and she'll tell you, you know, that she doesn't, she's like, this is just nuts. This is just nuts, you know? And, you know, I try to reassure her. I'm being like, look, it's like, everyone questions that, you know, it's okay to question that. But, you know, so when we get talking about it, you know, and I gave her some tips is what I did initially because of all these, you know, I mean, she couldn't sleep, You know, I mean, she was constantly getting woken up by, oh, this, I mean, she saw this, I mean, it's like the classic picture you see of, you know, the demon sitting on the woman's chest with the horse looking through, you know, that classic picture. I don't know if it was Hieronymus Bosch. I'm not sure who did that painting, but, you know, it's this classic picture with this little demon sitting on someone's chest while they're sleeping. And it's like that type of stuff was happening. You know, she was like waking up to like demons, you know, like full manifestations. And it was at times, you know, it was sleep paralysis, maybe, you know, for her boyfriend, or he wouldn't wake up when she was trying to wake him up, or things like, I mean, like, if you name it, and it's happened, you know. And I believe that, and I apologize if I get the story wrong, because that's the one thing I hate doing, because we have talked quite a bit, but I also talk to a lot of other people, so sometimes I get my stories confused, Yeah, and I do believe that her one of her children was kind of having these dreams that were kind of like happening. So I don't know if they were like premonitions, or, you know, maybe I think maybe in one case something was actually happening in her room and one of the children was dreaming it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It was at the exact same time. I was going to actually bring that up myself. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really, really crazy to me, you know, and that to me shows like a systematic demonic infestation. People, I guess, you know, if you're a paranormal person, demonic infestation is simply poltergeist. It's just another word. So my initial thought was, well, what do we do to get rid of this? Pull out all the tricks, right? Get yourself. So, you know, my initial thing was, well, have you been baptized? Do you go to church? You know, let's start there. You know, do your kids go to church? Have they been baptized? You know, and I think she was, I think, raised Catholic. She was definitely baptized. She's not Catholic, which, you know, and this is like one of those things like we talked about earlier that may offend some people. I told her to, you know, I suggested, I didn't tell her, to get baptized in a Catholic church.
She and the children?
Yes. Because I don't know if the children were baptized at all. You know, like I said, she was, you know, and I said, well, look, you can go into, you know, any Protestant church and get baptized on a Saturday. And that's good. That's good. That's a great start, you know, but the tradition of baptism in the Catholic Church is a little bit more meaningful. And I think that the meaning, by, you know, the whole tradition and the whole spectacle of it kind of adds maybe to the power of it. So I suggested that, you know, get baptized, get your kids baptized, and then let's, you know, let's go from there and see what happens.
If you did it like Nacho did to Steven in Nacho Libre, would that count?
Wait.
Do you remember that scene?
I
don't know why you always have to be judging me. And then he puts his salad down and Nacho comes over with a bowl of water and he's kind of whispering the prayer and he just shoves his head right into the big bowl of water. And he's like, crosses himself with the thing. And he's like, there you go, you're baptized.
There you go. You're done. Sorry. Well, that's what they do.
I mean, you know how I do. I just popped in my head, so I just was, you know.
It just popped in there.
Wondering.
Like Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
It just popped in. Ray, what did you do?
What did you do? just popped in there, man.
All right, sorry. Go on. So you were talking about baptism in a very serious way, and I screwed that right up.
Yeah. Don't worry. I've actually gotten better at interviews.
I try to take you off track to see how good you are now. Yes, you know me. No, it has nothing to do with that. I'm a moron like that. Okay, so it did slow down the activity after. So all of them went on the same day and did this?
I don't know how exactly it happened.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if the children went, but I do know she did. And I asked her to go to RCIA and join a Catholic church, because she did have the house, I believe, blessed by a, well, I don't know exactly what derivative, but I'll just say Protestant because they're all Protestant if they're not Catholic. And I'm not saying that to be rude. Everyone's going to throw something at their whatever. Mm-hmm. They're probably driving right now and they're probably going to get in an accident, but I don't mean that. I'm just saying, you know, Protestantism was the beginning of things like whatever, Baptists and all that stuff. So I can't remember what kind of minister came in, and they did do a blessing of the house and it didn't work. So that's why I suggested, you know, because the Catholic Church has such a longer history. You know, it goes all the way back with the Hebrews and the Muslims. I mean, that's tradition. You know, I mean, fiddle around the roof, but I mean, that's the way.
Don't get me singing that song, all right? Don't even start me on that.
So that's why I suggested it to her. I was like, no, that's, you know, let's do that. And I don't know if she ever got around to doing that. But she certainly inquired, and I told her, you know, what you need to do to get, a Catholic priest in your house. And you got to jump through hoops. Right. You really do. Now, every state has an exorcist. Some states probably have multiple exorcists. I don't know the one in my state. However, I do know one in San Jose. I never mentioned his name before, but I don't think it's a big deal. His name is Father Gregory, actually. You can look him up. He's an exorcist. And in the past, we've talked about him, and he was the one who's the movie The Rite was based on with Anthony Hopkins, that movie there. Mm-hmm. You know, we had great conversation about that. But yeah, his name is Father Gregory, and he teaches about sin. And it's funny because he's on the web, he's out there, and he's not like hiding, you know, he's out there like, yeah, I'm an exorcist for the Catholic Church. And one of the things he teaches is to, I think, like high school students about sin. And I remember talking to him about this because we do have somewhat of a relationship. You know, that's the first step to possession is sin. So with all this stuff going on, you know, and all this, you know, demonic siege and it's happening to multiple people, you know, so I start wondering, like, could she be possessed? Okay, that's my initial thought, you know, and we did have conversations. Could she be cursed? Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we both ruled those out. Because those were pretty heavy things that I think you would remember. Like if your mother cursed you in the womb or something like that. I mean, obviously, if she did it and never told you, you wouldn't know. But if your mother cursed you in the womb, then you probably wouldn't have a good childhood. You know, and that you would remember. So I didn't, you know, it was really, really, you know, it was really playing with me for a while there. You know, I can't get a handle on it. That's why, you know, we started talking about me going there. You know, now I live about 10 to 12 hours away. But if this is what it takes for me to maybe help her get this stuff out of the house, you know, and it may only take. And look, I don't know if people know this, but a lay person can actually do an exorcism in an emergency. So a lay person can actually perform, you know, certain rites of, spiritual warfare. Okay. They can perform certain rituals and rites to help with that battle. One of the books that I referred to her was by, I believe, Paul Thigpen. It was called something on spiritual. It was a book on spiritual warfare. I recommended it to her, and she bought it and she read it and she absolutely loved it. Since she bought that book, things have actually slowed down a little bit, which is really good. You know, to me, that shows that we're trending in the right direction now. You know, it's like, okay, the incubus stuff is not maybe happening or not happening as much. Okay. And, you know, the events are not happening as often because, you know, when we talk, you know, I always ask, like, how have things been? You know, and last time we talked was maybe 2 weeks ago and she said things were good.
What kinds of things is she doing then?
So if you check this book out, the book on spiritual warfare, there's just, it's what it is it's a collection of prayers, psalms, and rituals that protect you from demons. That's all it is.
That you speak out loud.
Or not. Mm. You know, it depends on the prayer, you know. So yeah, Catholics, we have, you know, the Hail Mary, we have the Our Father, we have things like that. But there's other stuff. So in this is what's cool about being Catholic, is that we can do what are called prayers of intercession. Because, well, that's, you know, we have saints, right? So we can, and we believe in angels, right, as Catholics. So we can say prayers to, say, I don't know, Saint, you know, whatever, or the Archangel Michael, right? And this is, I think, in Thigpen's book. And we can ask, you know, we can ask him to intercede for us on behalf of God or Jesus Christ to, you know, help, as opposed to, you know, just going right up the chain. And, you know, that's helpful in a lot of ways, because it shows humility, which is a huge Catholic Christian trait, where, you know, you may think you're not worthy enough to pray, or I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe I should just pray to, you know, the Blessed Mother, right? Because we have tons of prayers to her. But there's prayers of intercession, you know, instead of, you know, asking the man upstairs, you ask the Blessed Mother to intercede for you. You know, it's like asking your buddy to, this is a terrible, terrible analogy, but it's like, you know, when you're 16, asking your buddy to go buy beer for you.
Right.
But that's essentially what's happening, is he's like, you're asking, you know, someone who's not God, to intercede on your behalf. And they may not, and it's not a chain of command thing. This isn't an office space. It's not like they go and they take a letter or a fax up to God and say, hey, this person down here needs a help. What do you think? You think I can step in? But because we believe in all these angels and saints and things like that, that, you know, we believe that they can step into our lives and they can help us. And that has helped her, I think, knowing that there is, for every bad thing out there that she's seen or experienced, there are twice as many, literally, good things out there that can prevent these things or help her process these things. And that's what Thigpen's book is all about. Like I said, like prayers of protection, things you can say before you go to bed at night. You know, even just like little rituals, like holy water. You can get holy water at any Catholic church. You know, there's fonts of it everywhere. You know, just take a little holy water and put it on your forehead at night. Make the sign of the cross. You know, say a Hail Mary and go to bed. I mean, simple stuff. You know, and some of it's complex. Some of it's not. You know, some of it's just that. Maybe put a little on your threshold of your bedroom door, you know, dump a little holy water there, you know, and say a little prayer and say, hey, you know, this is my room tonight. No non-human entities are entering this room tonight.
And are those things that she was executing as well? Like, I remember you talking about salt and things like that, too. Was she executing holy water and salt and things like that, especially in her bedroom?
Yeah, I don't know specifically, but I think what she was relying on mostly was the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because she seems to be very down to earth, loving, caring. You know, I don't know if I want to say what she does for work, but her job is essentially like, I mean, she cares. I mean, to do her work, you have to have a big heart, you know, and I'm sure that some of that comes home with her. And I've told her this, that I think that's part of the problem, you know, in what she may or may not see on a daily basis. You know, so, but I think to her, it's just been a lot of prayer and a lot of contemplation and a lot of empowerment. I think talking to me and having me, you know, give her guidance and, you know, this is, like I said, being a teacher, you know, maybe being on your show, even though, you know, I we've had conversations in the past and she just said that she doesn't like to talk about it because it gets more active. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to her recently, I was like, do you mind, you know, if I, you know, cause I'm writing a book, you know, it was going to be a collection of stories like yours. And, it just ended up being a headache. So I was like, well, I'll make a book on fiction based on her story. And I asked her flat out, I was like, look, I want to write a book and I want to base it on you. And she was totally fine with that. You know, even though she knows, like, yeah, I mean, I'm a little nervous that it could fire things up a little bit, because that's what she believes. You know, if you talk about it, then, you know, it could manifest. And she's not wrong. That's what's, yeah. You know, she's not wrong. You know, I mean, you talk, I mean, I've been listening to your show for so long. I remember when you were going to make it into the Fray Tulpa, you know. I mean,
people went, oh, that's a great idea, Shannon. Great. Real smart there. Yeah. The ITF Tulpa. Oh, man, I haven't thought about that in a long time. Pun intended there.
That was ages ago.
Yeah, that was back in the day. Me and Sam and Ryan, we were talking about tulpas, and I'm like, man, we should create our own tulpa. We have to paint the picture of what it would look like and then have everybody just think about it as much as possible. And then, of course, I'd go, well, I don't want to visit my house. Sam, it can go to yours, you know. Like,
what did it look like? Like a giant octopus, like Cthulhu or something.
Oh, God. Well, for Sam, it would be, you know, at least please just don't make it like a massive locust with a human face. Because he's seen something like that. He's like, screw you. JP, because you said that laymans can perform exorcisms, right? Sure. Now, obviously, you are not in that category. But, I mean, how far are you away from being able to call yourself an exorcist? Or could you right now?
No, I am a layman. Basically, anyone who's not a priest is a layperson.
Okay.
So I am nowhere near being an exorcist.
But we will be talking about, you know, another woman that has had some interesting things, and you were there for that. So, but not yet. But
no.
So,
but if I were to do one, I would have to do it from the book. I would have to read it. I don't have it memorized. I would have to go step by step through the book, and that's how I would have to do
it. If you are an actual exorcist, you have to have it memorized?
No. But I would assume most exorcists
probably helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's certain prayers in there, like, you know, obviously the Hail Marys and the Our Fathers, they're all part of it. But then there's these, you know, random Psalms that are just like, well, okay, that makes sense that it's in there when you read it, but it's like, mm-hmm. Where does it come in? Then there's just this whole other stuff that's not even in the Bible. That's just written specifically for, you know, and it's basically, you know, initially you want, as an exorcist, your main goal is what's your name, for whom or under whom do you operate, and when do you plan on leaving? That's really
that's the information that they love to keep close to the chest, right? That's the whole, right. Isn't that the whole game of the thing?
Right. Yeah, that's you're talking about the exorcist or the demon?
Like the actual process, yeah. Like the process is trying to get the demon to say its name, and it's playing coy, and it's all about just being a trickster, right?
Right. And I always thought, you know, I wasn't sure if that was true or not, but it is, you know. But, you know, it's, and they never give their, when they say, and I've said this before, I think, on other episodes. So, you know, if a demon, you know, what's your name, for whom do you work? Well, for less, I don't know, for under whom do you operate, or who is your commander, and when do you plan on leaving? When they say something, or when you hear a voice or whatever, and it's some demon, like one of the 72, right? Like the main 72 demons that Solomon supposedly conjured, right? Like Astaroth or something like that. It doesn't mean that Astaroth is in the body. It doesn't mean that. You know, that
but
means,
could
like,
it be? Would he even have time or care to do such a thing?
Absolutely.
That would be bad, right? I mean, if something...
That would be awful.
One of the actual 72 is in there.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that would be, I would think that would be like complete possession, like total possession, integration, as they say. I don't know if any lesser demon is capable of integration.
Do you know of a case that you believe to be real that actually had one of the 72 big guys in there?
Well, there was the girl that died.
During the exorcism?
Yeah.
So
I can't remember, but that was, I think, a case of, because the only thing that can help you is divine intervention. Mm-hmm. And that's it in that case. But they also, you know, when they did the movie, The Exorcist, like I said, that was based on the story they met at Georgetown University, the author of the book and the young man who was possessed. They were the same age and they met at Georgetown University, and that's how the story was written. So it was a boy, not a girl. And I talked about this in the past too, but his was allegedly a case of integration. And so the priests were basically there doing everything they could, but it was really God that saved his life.
Is it a case where, sorry to keep interrupting, but if I don't say it, I'll forget. Is it a case where you could have a lesser possessing you and then you get weak enough and then one of the big boys jumps in? Or is it not work like that? Like whatever's in there stays there until, you know, it's forced to leave.
Yeah, I think whatever, this is just speculation. I don't think the big guys get involved. I think that whatever's in there is in there.
I mean, why not? What the hell else do they have to do? You know, what do demons do all day if they're not possessing someone or screwing with somebody?
If you look at the major demons, and you know, to be straight up with you, like lots of these demons are come from like five different guys, like Johannes Ware, what's his name, Mathers. You know, there's like several guys who you know, basically came up with all this stuff, and you know, and from writings, you know, I mean, St. Augustine talked about demons, Origen, Athanasius, John Chrysostom, you know, they all talked about demons, but it was really like a collection of guys who really put together a list when it came to like the Ars Goetia, right, the 72. I'm trying to remember. So for example, the original, they don't know who wrote it. Okay, the first edition, they think it was written in the 17th century. They don't know. But Samuel Mathers, I'm sorry, he wrote it in 1904. He kind of rewrote it. And then it gets edited over the time. And I think I have what is the second edition. So when you look at some of these guys in here, you know, I've read books where, you know, people will tell you, like Johannes Ware, for example, flat out made up some demons, like flat out, you know, some of them are just not true, you know, so it's like he just named them because of whatever, you know. But, you know, back to your question, like, what are they doing all day? If you ever look up, just like, you can go to, don't go online, just don't do the internet. I can't just deal with that. Go to the library, kids. Yeah. Yeah. Hey teens,
library, go to the friend. Library. Stay away from Wikipedia, for God's sake.
Oh my God, I can't handle it. I never let any of my students use the internet as a reference. So let's just randomly open the Ars Goetia, right? And who was I just talking about? What's that? Stolas. You remember Stolas, your boy?
I do, the owl man. He's a little owl, creepy
your
looking
boy
dude.
Stolas.
Yeah.
So okay, so according to the Ars Goetia, Stolas, he governeth 26 legions of spirits. Okay, so that's what they're doing. That's why the big guys don't come into humans. I mean, I don't know what a legion is. Is it 100? 1,000? Someone probably knows the answer to that. I don't know. You know, in whenever this was written or in Roman times, a legion probably has a number attached to it, maybe 100,000, I don't know. So he's maybe potentially got 26,000 demons under his control. Like, he's not going to go and possess someone.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yes. I mean, he can turn into an owl. He can turn into an owl and fly around and, you know, check on things.
I mean, but, if he could, why wouldn't you? That's... pretty cool, actually.
I mean, I would.
Does Stolas elect to, did these guys ever elect to, you know, change what they, their form, their shape, what they look like?
I don't
like?
Know if they can. You see, as the story goes, when God created the angels, they all had the one form. And when, you know, the one third kind of went with Satan in the other direction, they kind of assumed another form and they're stuck with it. They became, I think, you know, and I never had any, this is so weird, I never had anything bad to say about Satan. But it's true.
Nothing wrong with that. And maybe you just don't want to get on his bad side. Come on.
Well, honestly, you know, I had one of my professors tell me that he is not. And I say he, I don't mean he or she. They're genderless.
Right.
You know, I'm just a product of the 21st century. I'm an idiot, really. But he is basically a prosecuting attorney. He's doing his job. You know, if you read the book of Job, he's just doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
Really. He's just like, you know what, God, hit him with this, hit him with that. He'll blaspheme you. Okay. Okay. You know what? You do anything you want to him, just don't kill him. Okay. You know, Satan is, and I don't know exactly who said this, but a famous theologian said this. Satan isn't inherently evil. He became an avatar of what he was doing. Because if you're just out there doing, you know, all these terrible things, then you could become a terrible person, you know. And it's so close to the Islamic tradition of Azazel not bowing, you know, to man, you know, the only angel in the room. Yeah, I'm not bowing down to that thing made of clay. I'm far superior to that. Okay, well, now you're the first shaitan. You're the first jinn. See you later. Peace. It's the same story.
Look at all this knowledge in your head. There's so much in there.
Sometimes I get on.
I always am impressed when you're mental. Come on. I'm like, oh, your MTS is showing. I'm just kidding. You're amazing. I mean, because you can go from what we think of here for Catholicism or Christianity and then talk about Islam and compare and contrast. And that's why I love talking to you, because I always learn so much. And I know, guys, that if somehow you have some kind of a crazy memory and you can remember everything we've talked about on the other three shows,
right,
yes, we are probably talking about the exact same things in a way, shape, or form, because I am always so fascinated by this. And sometimes a simple question like, what do they look like? Did they change form? I'm sure I've asked that before, but damn it, I wanted to ask it again. So thank you for entertaining that, JP.
And you may not have, actually, because like I said, Stolas comes in the form of an owl.
Yeah.
I talk about furfur all the time in the form
furfur,
of
yes.
a heart, which yep. is, I guess, a fancy way of saying deer.
You know,
but I don't know if they can change those forms. But then here's the other thing. Like I said, and like you just said, we've probably mentioned some of this. You know, there's a 10-part book series out there by a guy named Michael Fries. It's just called Demonology, and it's a 10-part book series. And according to him, whenever a demon chooses to appear in the physical realm, 99% of the time, it does so as a shadow figure.
Mm.
And something is always off. So it has red eyes, or it's wearing a hat, or it's missing an arm, or you can't see the bottom half of it. And in every shadow person story I hear, that's what's happening, right?
Yeah.
They can't see the bottom half, or it's floating by, or it's missing an arm, or I just saw the head, or it's da, 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 da. Even my dad, and I just found this out when I started writing my book, had an encounter with the Hat Man. I just found this out like 2 months ago. Yeah.
When was that?
He was 16. It was like in the 60s. And he saw this guy, what he thought was a guy. And he was walking with his friend. I mean, this was the 60s, and his friend was tall, and his nickname was Stretch. Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like 6'3", and they were coming home from the boys' club. I mean, this is so 60s, probably smoking Pall Malls. And they're walking down, and they see this guy standing under a street light, the only street light in the road. And he's standing next to a car, and his waist is basically level with the roof of the car.
Yeah.
And he's wearing this big rimmed hat. And him and Stretch just bolt. And when they get to the next streetlight, they turn around and the guy is right where they were standing. Like he went boom, boom, like he was after him. And they just bolted again and the guy was gone. And I was like, Dad, you just saw the Hat Man, maybe. Or someone who was 8 feet tall.
Right.
You know,
and
what
very
I'm
fast.
Right. You know, I mean, so this is like, you know, as I get more involved in this stuff and like the books and the podcasting and all this other stuff, you start to learn stuff about even your own family, for God's sakes.
Like, you know? You've been holding out on me, Pop.
Ray, what's up with that?
Now, you mentioned, you know, okay, who is your commander? Who's in charge of you? So wouldn't...
Right.
Because the thing that your mind jumps to is that, of course, well, that would be Lucifer, Satan, but you might be meaning one of the 72. Like, are you trying to go up the ranks, or what's the thought with that?
Yeah. So essentially, yeah. Well, I mean, some demon may have some completely abstract name like Morgan X or so. I just made that up off the top of my head.
That was badass.
Right. And you know, that and he may answer to Stolas. And essentially what you're trying to do is say, okay, I know your name, you know, now I'm going to tell you when you're going to leave this body as opposed to you telling me, because that's what you want to know during Axel. When do you plan on leaving? You know, and I didn't even know that was a question until I started looking into it. It's like, are you going to be here for a while? You know,
it's like a talk at a bar. Like you're trying to hit on a chick. You're like, come here often. Well, when are you going to go? Because
we're heading after this.
Yeah. And then that's when the grumbly voice comes out. That is not the person that is talking at all. Right.
We're heading after this. We're going to call your boy. He's going to come pick you up. Yeah. You know, because I mean, essentially, I guess in a funny way, that's what they're trying to do. You know, could you call the person who's leading? Because I mean, look, I'm just assuming if these guys have legions and they're all in charge of different things and there's ranks and Satan, I mean, I don't know, he's probably crazy busy. I mean, he doesn't have time for this. And I'm being facetious, but I mean, I'm kind of
he needs to create like Legion Lift or something, and then he's like, all right, I'll call you Lift. I guess you're done down there, homie. Come on home, you know.
Yeah, he's probably busy planning the next presidential election. Who knows?
He's ripping and eating up souls, just delicious, just barbecuing stuff. I mean,
one after another.
I mean, I won't lie. You know, in fact, before we hopped on, I put the birds away. Some of them go in, you know, a closet or, you know, a separate room because I know who's going to be loud and who's not. And the other ones stay in the living room, and I just put on something on Netflix or something. And it's always something dark. I have to have like, you know, I'll put on like The Ritual. You know, I love that movie. I think it's a pretty cool show because the creature's so different. But I put on a show about serial killers. And, you know, someone like, you know, Alfred Fish or who is oh my God, that man is so effed up. You know, those are the people that anyone that hurts a child or, you know, molests a child, takes a child, kills a child, or, you know, any of these really dark things that is hard to watch, you're hoping, you know, I'm hoping that there is like the scenes at Constantine where he's down in hell, you know, like the demons with the half a head. You're like, I hope that Alfred's down there, you know, like, and you hate burning, to think like that, but but you think like, were they ever people? You know, because some of these guys started doing it when they were younger, and you're like, were they just demons just right off the bat? Are they even ever human to be able to torture and kill a child?
To do what they do.
Yes.
I mean, you know what? And this is, I'm so glad you brought this up because I didn't even think about this. I mean, I think about it all the time, but I didn't think to send it to you. So, like, I subscribe to like 12 different paranormal podcasts. And I subscribe to like 15 different like true crime podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening over the last years, and I'm like, there's an overlap here somewhere. There's an overlap, you know, because forget about Satanic Panic. Like that happens in a lot of missing cases. But, you know, so I actually emailed one of the guys from one of my favorite true crime podcasts, and he got back to me. You know, and I'm like, whoa, this is different. You know, I'm used to like, you know, you getting back to me from the paranormal end. But he was like, look, if you find a case that you really think is a satanic ritual, let me know. And we'll talk about it. And I'm like, no kidding. And, you know, because I really, really do believe that, you know, in order to commit these crimes, I mean, look, to be a rationalist right now, you also have to consider mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Mental illness, right? And when I talk about like Father Gregory, you know, and his biggest fear when he did an exorcism, and I've said this on other shows, was discernment. So if he goes in to a house and someone is displaying signs of being possessed, he knows in his heart if they are mentally ill, he's going to make it worse. Mm. And that's really scary. It's really scary. That's why, in order to have an exorcism, you have to be checked out by a doctor, a behavioral health specialist, probably a psychiatrist, and then the church sends a doctor, a behavioral health specialist, and a psychiatrist before you even meet you know, The Exorcist.
Which I think is, that is how the process should be. Because it should as be. You I'm, said, we can't always be like, it's the demon's fault. Oh, here we go. He's possessed right. again. He's eating, you know, he's bathing in the baby blood again. You can't right. just always blame the demon. So I think that it's people, smart. There's yeah. so many hoops to jump through.
I think so, too. I mean, some people are just mad. You yeah. know, I mean, when I think of Chris Watts, for example, right? You know the guy.
Who's
right?
Chris? No, I don't know Chris Watts. Who's that?
The guy who killed his pregnant wife and his two kids. And
oh, the open. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I just watched and that. Sorry. He has such a boring name that it doesn't jump out in my head. I know. What a piece of crap. I was...
He gets love letters in prison and stuff.
Oh, my God. You know what? I was so pissed. And if you guys haven't watched that, I mean, it's not a great PSA oh to God. Say that I was, you know, I was close to tears. And then yeah. I read an article after I watched it. I was kind of obsessed with it for a couple of days, which makes sure. sense because I didn't even remember the guy's name, but I really did. But the guy, one of the crime scene guys or the homicide guys had gone out and he was there when he pulled the two girls out of the oil tank. And he said, and he's completely effed up now.
I know what you're going to
say. Completely effed up. He's PTSD central.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, who could blame the guy? He no longer can even work.
The term that they use for when they tried to pull them out?
What?
It's called degloving.
Oh.
That's just the most, jeez. I can't even, like, just to think about it, you know what I'm saying? And then, but to be there, and you're like, okay, there's the body, let me grab the arm.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The skin's coming off.
Yeah.
I mean, and for someone to
they
do
can't
that.
Do, oof. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, Chris Watts, I hope there's a hell, and I hope that you go to it when you eventually die. I hope.
And who knows? I mean, maybe he came from there. I mean, yeah, this
right.
is the
that's,
stuff that
that's
makes me
I
wonder.
That's where I was kind of
right,
getting at.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was getting at. I'm like, was there ever any part of you that was a person? You were just masquerading that whole time. I mean, the guy, I don't even think he probably barely had a speeding ticket. They would have brought up any past criminal history. I mean, that's why when people say, well, you know, background checks and stuff like
right.
that's not always even applicable because some people, like I said, he might not, I don't even think he had a speeding ticket and right. he killed her. The effing mom is laying on the floor of the truck and you put your kids on the seat right above the dead mother.
What is that?
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah. And that makes me, question a lot of things, you know, and this makes me question God, honestly,
right?
You know,
right.
I mean, if he's not, you know, sent here from hell, I mean, is he? If he's just a human, and you know, and this is the biggest problem people have with a religion, you know, is why does God allow this to happen? And that's the biggest argument that I have with atheists, you know, and it's a tough one. And the best I can really do is refer them to C.S. Lewis. He wrote a book called The Problem of Pain. Mm-hmm. And he just sums it up better than I ever could. Why pain exists in the world. I can't even do it justice, but if you read it and you read it twice and maybe a third time, you really start to understand why things like that have to happen. You know, and I hate to say like it had to happen
right.
because I didn't just watch it. You know, I mean, I've been following it ever since it happened. You know, I remember listening to, you know, when it happened, I remember listening to the news. And, you know, if you live in a world, I mean, kid you for imagine live in a world where nothing bad ever happened. No one got cancer. No one got murdered. You know, everyone walked around eating chocolate chip cookies and having orgasms. I mean, what kind of world is that? After a while, you'd become numb to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't even care. You wouldn't know happiness if you didn't know pain. You know, you wouldn't know love if you didn't know hate. And it sucks that these things happen. And yeah, I don't know. I wish I did know. All I do know is that I agree with you, and I hope he burns.
Mm. And, you know, he's in prison for the rest of his life, and everybody knows they don't take kind to folk that unless another person has, you know, killed a child, especially their own, they don't take kind to those folks. So I hope that he is just, I'll just stop right there. But I'm just going to, you know what I'm, where I'm going with that. But that is An American Murder. Don't ask me if it's on Netflix or Prime, because now that those are like married on the same screen, I forget which is which. Netflix or Prime. Watch it. You will get pissed, and it's not a fun show to watch, but it is recommended.
You're right. It's not something that's fun, but it's something I think people need to watch.
Yeah.
You know, because every time you hear some of this stuff, oh, my God, he was such a nice guy. He was such a nice guy. He was such a nice guy.
Talk about a mental break. I don't know.
He was a clown.
Yeah. just like the Petersons, Lacey Peterson. Oh, I'm done with you. Found somebody new. I guess I have to kill you. Oh, just like the guy said in court, he's like, you ever hear the word divorce? You effing
get
asshole.
A divorce.
Psycho. The guy is in his how old do you think Chris is? 40s? He's in his early 40s, right? Maybe late 30s. Let's say late 30s.
Yeah, I would say he's
The actual F is there that much of, how are you hiding something that dark? To where you know what I'm saying? Just everybody go watch it. We're on a tangent. I apologize, but go watch that show, and you'll see why we're so worked up about it. And that's why I brought up the serial killer thing that I put on for. Oh, I brought that up because I put it on for noise for the birds, and it's always something dark that I put on. Poor birds.
So you put that on for the birds.
Yeah, I put because I know that it'll run for probably 5 or 6 episodes before it says, "Hey, are you still there?" And I don't know if we'll be done before then, but I just put that on because if they hear me talking in the back room, they go, "Woman, come get me out of my ca-." Anyway, but yeah, so that's where that question came from. So okay,
it's relevant.
Yeah, no, thank you. Sorry for the tangent, everybody. So this book on exorcism with the prayers and steps for ritual, whatever you want to call it, for that prescription for a person, if that's what they need, is that a book that anybody can pick up? Or
Look it up on. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble.
What's it called? Exorcism 101?
No, it's written by a guy named Paul Thigpen. I think he's just a theologian.
That's not the spiritual warfare book that you keep mentioning, is it? Is it the same one?
Yeah, it's just a book on spiritual, and it's full of prayers and things to keep you safe.
I think I need to pick that up because you have brought Paul up every single time that we've been on, and you've talked about that book. I'm sorry, I guess I didn't realize it. I just thought it was maybe some super secret tiny little black book that, you know, once you're an official exorcist for a state, like they send you this, like from a stork, like from above, or maybe God drops it, like from...
Right, it's funny because it is a little black book.
Is it? Oh, well, shit. That's awesome. Okay.
It is. It's tiny, but it's full of info. I mean, I've got the Ars Goetia here, and it's tiny. It's like this thick as a magazine, you know. It's the same type of size, you know, maybe 100 pages.
Size doesn't always matter. There's powerful stuff in those pages. You know, it doesn't have to be a freaking tome that you could kill somebody with, you know.
Right.
And would you ever want to be... the state exorcist for Maine? Or Rhode Island, or one of the... one that you could drive to. Because didn't you tell me that the smaller states don't always, like, you know, that you'd have, like, a traveling guy. Like, you'd be the northeast corner guy, like Maine and Rhode Island.
I would think so. I would think, you know, just because of the size of Rhode Island, I don't know if we necessarily have one here. Massachusetts, maybe. Massachusetts and Rhode Island are basically, we're connected. You know, this is silly, but I always felt that, you know, they should draw a line in the middle of Rhode Island and the top half should join Massachusetts and the bottom should join Connecticut. I mean, just to get it over with, you know, but I think that, you know, maybe in areas like that, but at the opposite end, in places like California, I think there may be more than one. I only know one, you know, and he's in San Jose, but that doesn't mean there's not one in LA or, you know, based out of San Diego or something like that.
So you can't get online and find the actual list of who's who and where they're. Yeah.
No. And in fact, I at the last job I had, I worked with a priest who he was defrocked, unfortunately. I mean, he did some bad things, but
that kind of stuff.
He was. I forget the name of the movie, Spotlight. He got jammed up in that, because it was in Boston and it bled down into Rhode Island, and he got caught up in that. And you know, he did his time. But the place I worked, you know, that's what we did. I worked in the prison and we did rehabilitation, and I was a, you know, case manager and a teacher, you know, and I worked with guys who were in there for, you know, simple, stupid crap, like selling weed and having a stupid, like, you know, 22 under their car seat. Like, what the heck are you doing? You know, you're 19 years old. You got jars of weed. Why are you carrying a 22? Give me a break. You could shoot me all six times and it's not going to stop me.
Yeah, you're just going to piss somebody off and now you have a felony. I mean, really smart boys.
Right. You know, and now you're in here. Okay. Instead of being like in school, you know, flirting with girls and having a good time. And then I, you know, other guys who, you know, manslaughter, you know, accident, feel terrible. Get in a bar fight, literally. Guy falls down, has an aneurysm, hits his head. Oh, now you're in 10 to 15. Sorry. You know, I mean, but yeah, back with tangents. My God.
But this is guy, how we do, buddy. It's how we do. This is how we end up with epic length conversations.
3-hour, 4-hour episodes. Right? Yeah. But he did his time. And, you know, I'm not saying there's a cure for what he did, you know, but he because he was a former priest, he knew, you know, every priest in the state. And he wouldn't tell me who the exorcist was. He would not tell me. Hmm. He knew it, but he wouldn't tell me. He said he couldn't. So, you know, there is this thing, you know, once a priest, always a priest. And that's true. Once you become a priest, you cannot. So you can be defrocked. So you can't ever do services, anything like that again. But the only person who can actually take your quote unquote powers away, right? Because, you know, having a master's degree in divinity is very different than having a master's degree in theology. Okay. So which is also very different than having a master's degree in biblical studies. So like you said earlier, like an hour ago, like if someone wants to go back and forth with me and quote the Bible, like I'm not going to be able to stand toe to toe with that. I don't know the Bible like someone who has a master's degree with biblical studies. But if you want to talk about St. Augustine and Thomas Aquinas and Chrysostom and Origen and the, you know, the triune God, yeah, let's go. And then priests, divinity, what they train them to do is rituals, baptism, you know, first communion. You know, that's what they do. They are given the power to turn water into, turn the wine into the blood, and then turn the, you know, the host into flesh. You know, I mean, the whole Eucharistic ritual. They're endowed with that power when they become a priest, and you cannot take that away. The only, even if you're defrocked, right, it just means you can't do it anymore. The only person that can do that is the Pope. They can actually, like, strip you of all your priestly endowments. You know, so this guy, like I said, I mean, he was defrocked, but he wasn't, you know, a layperson anymore. So he still knew what was going on, and he would not tell me, you know, who the exorcist or, you know, that works in this area, you know, or did work in this area when he was active. I'm not sure. But, yeah.
I think it's fascinating that it's that secretive.
Yeah, I don't know why, you know, I guess I do know why. I mean, the church is extremely secretive. I mean, let's be honest, you know, maybe they just don't want people freaking out all the time. I don't know why that is. I mean, if someone has a headache and they throw up, oh my God, call the exorcist.
I think that's probably, you know, what it is. I mean, it's the same reason that, you know, some of these folks that are on maybe a show or something, they'll create a separate email address. It doesn't have their name attached to it, or if they even want to do that, you know, because they would probably just be completely inundated. So I could understand that.
And that's why I have a lot of respect for Father Gregory, because he does do exorcisms, but primarily he's a teacher, you know, to high school students, you know, because that's what he thinks is important. You know, let's stop sin. You know, to him, that's where it starts. And that is, you know, if you look up the list of, you know, possession and how it progresses, the first step is sin. And, you know, that's what he talks about, because when you're young, you have a tendency to sin, according to the Judeo-Christian, you know, rites.
All right, so before we get to the woman that you met that was legit possessed, because I know that's a longer story, and I want to make sure we cover all that. Sure. Can you, and if you want to, it's totally up to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Father Gregory.
Yeah.
You've had conversations with him. What is, has he ever divulged to you what the craziest thing, and it may not be crazy to him because that's what he does, but to us, to me maybe specifically, what would be, you know, something extremely jarring that he's come across during an actual exorcism, or something that maybe even surprised him during one of those things?
So we never spoke specifically about exorcisms that he did. I was really just after him for information.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that he did have some answers that were jarring to me. I told him my story about seeing that little demon guy, and he asked me afterwards, do you believe in vampires and werewolves? And I said, no. Like traditional vampire? I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, what? He's like, why not? I'm like, because it's nonsense. Yeah, I wish werewolves were true. You know, were real. I wish I was one. But no, I mean, maybe dog man. Maybe, you know, I don't know. You know, and I know you don't like the phrase dog man. I mean, I wish they started calling him wolf man. But
I'm right there with you on that, you know.
But that was one of those things that kind of shocked me.
Well, did he answer you then? I mean, but did he continue that train of thought? That I mean,
not a heck of a lot. He was just
he's
like,
gonna dangle that carrot and not explain.
Yes, yes. I'm like, well, should I? And he just said, you should be more open to that.
Oh my God! And so I'm you're like, telling me that Robert could really be out there and he could be a vampire? That is amazing, Robert. I knew it, buddy. I knew it. Come on, let's go. I want to meet you. Let's do this.
I should give more thought to that. Really? I was like, are you crazy?
You should give more thought to that. That must have really caught you off guard. Just those two words coming out of his mouth. Because you're probably just trying to like be really, like, you know, focused, professional with your questions.
Rational.
And he busts out with vampires and werewolves. Holy crap.
Well, because we're talking about the little critter, and I'm you know, wondering, you know, did I see a demon? And he's like, well, you know, I'd advise you, because we had the historical cemetery down the street from my house. He's like, I would advise you to go down to the historical cemetery, find out who's buried there, go to the town hall, find out what they were into. Mm. You know, see, do as much research as you can on that family.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could have been into witchcraft, for example, and they could have brought something from the metaphysical realm into the physical realm. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't, I mean, and I'm then and even that is extraordinary for him to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's almost like, you know, he's bordering on like the multiverse theory. Okay, like,
yeah,
anything goes here. Is right. Is that what we're talking about?
Like, so everything's real that we've been talking, you know,
right? I mean, it was amazing,
but
it was definitely. And when we talked for about an hour, it was. He gave me homework. I'll tell you that. He told me, get this book, get that book, get this book, and I went out and I started buying books up just to read them. But I'm shocked that he even replied to me, because I think I can't remember who it was that was trying to get in touch with him. And, you know, because he's out there. He's an exorcist. People email him. But I put in the email heading, the master's degree, Providence College, and he got right back to me. And, you know, that's not – look.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with flagging that thing around, or with waving that flag around at all. You should be proud of that. And it does put you close to people that you should be talking to.
Right. And it is one of the best schools in the country for a graduate level theological education. And I think he saw that and he was like, okay, I'll talk to this guy. So, you know, but that really –
That's amazing. How about them vampires and werewolves, huh, John Paul? And you're like, excuse me?
Did you just have a stroke?
What? Right. Father Gregory, do you need me to call 911? Just tell me your address really quick. I'll send them right now. Are you okay? Random question.
Shoot.
Here we go. Train off the tracks again. If I was to get, you know, the book by Thigpen, the spiritual warfare book, does getting a book like that kind of, you know, automatically put you on the quote unquote the radar somehow a little more? You know, if you really start to read that and you're diving into it and you're thinking about it, you know, really a lot every couple of days or whatever it might be, does that put you on the radar?
So the short answer, yes.
Okay, on to the next thing.
No. Actually, I'm sorry if I'm actually digging for something. I'd like to read it to you. But I believe it does in the shortest answer, because, you know, if these things are existing in the metaphysical realm, right, where your mind exists, right, and we talked about Rene Descartes splitting mind-body dualism, things like that. Your brain is in your head, and it affects the physical world, and your mind is in the metaphysical realm, and it affects and can be affected by the metaphysical realm. But, you know, what am I trying to look? What did you just ask me, Shannon? My God.
No, it's so okay. No. I do that constantly. Don't even worry about it. No, just basically if you get a book like Thick Pens. Yeah.
So essentially you're going to be a bit of a shining light. And this is why, going back to Anne, you know, you talk about it, and I think, and this is, you know, and we'll get into it when we get into the possessed lady. The woman I worked with was a shaman, and that's what she did. You know, she did the rattles and she did the turtle shells and the sage, and she cleansed houses. You know, when you're a beacon, you know, if you're out there in the ether, and, you know, you're existing in this, you know, non-human metaphysical realm, you know, then something happens. She believed that they could travel through television and airwaves like this, like just simply listening to our conversation right now. Mm-hmm. If you're like really into it and you start obsessing about it and you start thinking about all the things that I've been saying, and you start sweating and getting really nervous, like, holy crap, I didn't know this stuff. Like, all of a sudden that fear can be like blood in the water for a shark, you know, and that's true. In a way, so like I said, the short answer is yes, and I gosh darn it, I can't find what I'm looking for.
It's all right. I'm gonna look up that book right now.
It's this quote by Immanuel Kant that I really really wanted to read to you, but basically it was Immanuel Kant saying you gotta temporarily suspend your disbelief. Like if you really want to get into this stuff and you really want to understand it, you need to suspend your disbelief just for a minute. Like all the things you know about reality and life and you know, anything, you know, gravity, like you really have to just put that on the back burner and just accept for the fact that this stuff is possible, you know. And if you can do that, then you can start to understand these conversations a little bit better. And you know, I wish I could find the quote, because it's much better than that. But
I've found a copy of Manual for Spiritual Warfare, Paul Thigpen, and it ships right from God's Outlet. So I mean, wow. If that's not a stamp of approval, I don't know what is. So there you go,
God's Outlet.
That's what it says it ships from. So I think
that is absolutely
pretty legit right there, right from God's Outlet. All right. okay, so now let's get the train back on the tracks here, because I definitely want to talk about the...
Okay, hold on one second.
No, that's okay. You're getting close, aren't you? You're like, listen, I need to get this out.
Yep, man. Yeah,
this
is a really, really, this is a good book. So credit where credit's due, you know. Leonard Eshley, he wrote a really, really concise book about demons.
What's the name of that?
It's just called Complete Book of Devils and Demons. Okay. Simple. It's very simple. And it's just little blurbs about lots of stuff. And it talks about Satanic Panic. Actually, the entire Rituale Romanum is in here. So the Roman Catholic exorcism translated from the Ritualis Romanum, first published in reign of Paul V. And it, you know, number one, the litany. Number two, Psalm 54. So this is why I was saying earlier, like, some of the stuff you got to have memorized. You know, he talks about Immanuel Kant. And Immanuel Kant was he's a contemporary philosopher. All these contemporary philosophers were also theologians. You know, they all really, it was kind of like the thing back then. You know, there's kind of like the highest thing you could achieve was to, you know, even like guys like Da Vinci and Augustine, you know, you can be a doctor, you can be whatever, but you are always a philosopher and a theologian as well. But I'll do my best to read this as quickly as possible. But it makes sense because this is kind of what you have to do when you talk about this stuff. So this is Immanuel Kant. If you balance against each other the advantages and disadvantages which might occur to a person organized not only for the visible world, but also, to a certain degree, for the invisible, if ever there were such a person. Such a gift would seem to be like that with which Juno honored Tiresias, making him blind so that she may impart the gift of prophesying. For the knowledge of the other world can be obtained here only by losing some of that intelligence which is necessary for the present one. So basically he's saying, like, the old Roman, when they took the eye out and they were blind, but they could see the future, but they were blind. So he's basically saying, essentially, like, you gotta kind of blind yourself to what's in front of you. The knowledge of the other world can only be obtained here by losing some of that intelligence which is necessary for this world. Which I think is kind of where you have to be as, you know, as I study as a theologian, you know, I have to kind of put aside, because I also have an associate's degree in biology. You know, I never talk about that. You know, I mean, that was so long ago that I got that. I mean, my God, I mean, I always remember biology and my anatomy and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes I gotta put that stuff aside, you know, just like I said, suspend my disbelief. But yeah, I just really wanted to get that out there.
I love these books. That's why I keep, and I want to put links in there for everybody too. It makes it easier so you can go to the show notes and just click on stuff. But I've been making notes too, because the C.S. Lewis book that you mentioned, we were talking about the Cytos. I find it very fascinating. And I would like to have even probably a quarter of the library that you do.
I think you might have a bigger library.
I don't know. Well, yeah, but yours is, you know, talking about your focus, like your demonology stuff and all that.
Literally all
over. Mine is kind of all over the place, yeah. Which is fine.
This one is just The Complete Book of Devils and Demons, Leonard R. and Ashley. And then everyone should have a copy of the Ars Goetia. It's the first book of The Lesser Key of Solomon, and it names the 72 demons that he called. It's a fantastic, fantastic book.
Is it hard to read?
No, not at all. And what's so cool about it is, and it's funny. The last line, it actually shows you the arrangement of the circle and triangle that Solomon supposedly drafted, that he called upon the demons in this magical circle. It is drawn to a T. It is drawn specifically so you can draw it. They even give the dimensions of it and the colors it should be. And then they have all the symbols of the demons in the book. So if you wanted that demon, you put that symbol in that spot.
What are you supposed to draw on this with? Can you draw with anything?
Yeah, you paint, chalk. I would imagine paint. Because there's a lot of yellow. There's a lot of writing in it. A lot of Hebrew writing.
But if we're talking going real dark, I mean, if you're doing a ritual like that, I mean, wouldn't you get like the classic animal blood or something like this? Would that make a difference?
No. I mean, well, yes. I mean, there are things that you need, and he does talk about that.
Oh, that's we're just not gotten there yet. Is the animal blood.
There are things like that. I don't even know where you can find them. Like, I think like one of the things you need is like a robe with a lion's mane how do you get a robe with?
Well, you have to be one of those assholes that goes and hunts the beautiful lions in Africa. So well, I guess I'm out on that.
I mean, and it's plus you got to make a vessel of brass to put him in afterwards because you got to send him home.
Hopefully you send him home.
I mean, the magic circle is just
wow.
I mean, look. I mean, this is right out of the Ars Goetia. This is the form of the magical circle of King Solomon. That which he made, he might preserve himself therein. I can't remember if he was in the circle or he put the demon in the circle. These evil spirits, the magical circle is made 9 feet across. The divine names are to be written around it, beginning with Ahaya and ending with Lavana, Luna. The circle must be colored as such. The space between the outer and inner circles, where the serpent is coiled with Hebrew names written along its body, is bright, deep yellow. Yeah. And it goes on like this. You know, they explicitly tell you, but that's what at the beginning of this book, at the very end of his little preface, he says, and I quote, and with that, the preface is complete. As a final warning, I do not recommend dabbling with demons playfully, even if you do not fully believe in them. You can damage your psychology, if not any soul you possess.
Because they believe in you. Right? So what if you just drew, the circle, you did the dimensions as best you could and all of this. Yep. Like, what if you didn't have every single piece, like the lion's mane and the brass vessel? Like, it would be pointless, or would you still be effing with things that you shouldn't be effing with?
I don't know. I mean, I want to say you still
Let's try it live.
you don't know how bad I want to do this. I mean, ever since I got this.
This is a better idea than the tulpa.
Where can I paint? Where do I have 9 feet of space where I can paint a giant serpent with Hebrew writing? I mean, come on.
Oh,
I mean,
my
of all
goodness.
The languages I can translate, Hebrew is not one.
Hey, we could take a couple of years and translate all that and draw a proper proper ritualistic circle. Holy crap.
I'll send you a picture of it afterwards. It's just so involved. It's just, I don't even know how. People do it, though. People do it. You know, and the first thing in Ashley's book that he'll tell you, and the first thing that I learned in demonology was you don't study this stuff out of morbid curiosity. Mm. You just don't. You know, you don't like a Ouija board. You know, if we were actually on video right now as opposed to just talking, you would see the Ouija board behind me. And, you know, you don't mess with it for shats and giggles. You know what I mean? You do it with some modicum of respect, just in case. You know, it's like Pascal's wager. There was this guy, a theologian named Blaise Pascal, and he came up with what's called the wager argument. And he said, it's better to believe and have it not be true than to not believe and have it all be true.
Mm-hmm.
And that converted so many people to Catholicism. Mm.
And yes, folks, you did hear that right. Not only does John Paul F with demons, and he knows people personally that have been possessed or are possessed, he is now screwing with the Ouija board, which we will talk about. So,
a Ouija board I found at a flea market.
That's right. Yeah, that's God right. knows what may be attached to that, so
Where
yay.
Did I come from?
That's the great thing about picking one up the flea market, especially. I remember.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to buy one, too.
No. God, no. You don't want a clean board. Come on.
No. I want to know where this
is. How fun is that? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so that's another book that I want to pick up, actually, because I would be pretty fascinated to learn more about the separate. See, there I go, saying I'm fascinated to learn more about them. Shut up, Shannon. Stop it. Stop it right now.
Morbid curiosity.
Yeah, I'm morbid curiosity. All right. So you feeling ready to tackle the subject of the possessed woman now?
Oh, I am.
Yeah, buddy.
Probably going to have a cigarette.
You might want to.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such-and-such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little firework. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is, is it? Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. in the Four Quartets, where he says, when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the train. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. The master will say to somebody, oh, get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.